We're going to begin this hour with Stroman on Sports, and we are joined now in the studio by Dr. Debbie Stroman, who's a longtime sports commentator, star athlete in her own right, and here in the studio today. So excited about that. How are you?
I'm doing well. Loving this spring weather that we're having.
Yeah, this is summer weather where I come from. Man, Michigan is this is nice July day for where I grew up. It's great.
Well, definitely enjoying it. I know a lot of people are outside running and walking and doing all those outdoor activities before the winter blast hits.
No
again.
Jacket, wearing shorts. It's great.
That's right.
So let's start by talking football. Obviously, the big story of the week is the Super Bowl, or a big game, as we're now officially required to call it, unless we're a sponsor of the Super Bowl. I don't know how that
might
works.
Might be a holiday soon.
Yeah, there you go, right? So thoughts on the Super Bowl? It was low scoring and boring.
Yes, and in fact, definitely a defensive battle for most fans, definitely not appreciating it. But even for someone who knows football, loves football, it was a tough game to watch.
Yeah, right.
There just wasn't much flow. We didn't have that big major referee scandal where they threw the flag and then maybe they shouldn't have thrown the flag. And so there was none of that. It was just a game that was pretty much watch the commercials, look at the halftime show, follow the game a bit.
Right.
And then in the fourth quarter, it heated up. But by then, people, as soon as you knew the Patriots were going to win, I think most people turned the TV off.
I think so, too. And the halftime show wasn't that great, and the commercials weren't that great. So, I mean, yeah, unfortunately.
But still over 100 million viewers all across the world. People are still jockeying to be a part of this game somehow, some way. There was no doubt the buzz was alive and well in Atlanta. I think the big story right now is, right now, Belichick, the coach of the Patriots, Tom Brady, the old man quarterback of the Patriots, have solidified their positions as the GOATs.
I think that's kind of official now. I was a big Peyton Manning fan, and all the way up until he retired, it's like, all right, he got his two Super Bowls, he's got all of the records, he's the greatest of all time. It's Brady now, obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah. From someone from Philadelphia, I hate to say it, but I definitely say it's true. What does it take? Everyone's saying, what about next year? Well, the Rams had a very complete team. Mm-hmm. They had a great season, and they lost.
Yeah.
And the Chiefs had a great season, great year, and they lost at home. So what does it take? Something magical like the Eagles last year, where it's a compelling story? And I don't know, but the Patriots, they're the team until those two decide to sit down.
Yeah. So kind of behind the scenes, what can we take away from this year's Super Bowl? Ratings were down, ratings were significantly down, but still 100 million people watched, so it's still a big money venture, even though maybe a little bit less so than it was a year or two ago.
Well, there's no doubt it is still the most socialistic and profitable sport franchise. Entity in the world. Well, I should say United States. I don't want to go into soccer real football. But there is no doubt it's a compelling activity for us as fans. And corporate America loves the NFL. And it is Black History Month. And so talking about the constant divide that we have in America around race, and then when you throw in the sport industry, it's alive and well. And so many, many fans, they were a little troubled by watching the game.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to turn away, but yet you don't want to miss this game and what could possibly happen. I do know there were lots of protests around the country and in Atlanta, but the NFL still struggles with the matter of race.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of with that in mind, turning to topic number two, which is the fact that it is now the start of Black History Month. And obviously, when we tell the story of Black history in America, a lot of the really significant achievements and advancements have been sports related, surprisingly enough. Jackie Robinson in the 1940s, I was watching, actually not because it was Black History Month, but because it was his 85th birthday. Hank Aaron, his 715th home run in 1975. 4, am I getting that year right? Muhammad Ali at the same time, not only a heavyweight champion, but also a major figure in the civil rights movement. And there's so many moments in American history in which we've actually made advancements on race that have revolved around the sport world. And yet at the same time, as you've said many times before, the world of sports has this incredible amount of power, and they're not using it as much as they could.
Well, you're talking about individuals who hold the keys to the institution. And so when you think about these billionaires with these 32 franchises, they certainly have the ability to change laws, principles, regulations. But then also they're a product of the country. And we know, and especially you being a historian as well, we know the history of this country is not told in its full, the way it should be told. There are many things that have been left out of our textbooks, many things that our teachers don't teach. And so then we end up 30, 40, 70 years old, and we're still not understanding black codes. We still don't know about the de jure discrimination that took place in terms of housing. We still don't understand why we don't have more black coaches. Well, if we're going to be in denial or even completely oblivious to what happened to this country and how it came to be as it is, then that's how we end up where we are today. And you have billionaires who don't really want to make moves that could change the country.
Yeah, people are still learning about the concept of the Green Book for the first time by
going
and seeing a movie starring a white guy, right? So you mentioned coaching in the NFL, and I know you've got some numbers. This is something that has been an issue for a long time. The NFL took a step with the Rooney Rule, but we're still a long ways away from getting to parity there.
That's exactly right, and we owe a lot to Johnny Cochran. Again, may he rest in peace. In 2002, Mr. Cochran and Cyrus Mahey issued a groundbreaking report in the NFL called Black Coaches in the NFL, Superior Performance, Inferior Opportunities. And from that, Paul Tagliabue, the former NFL commissioner, he put together a diversity committee. And then that diversity committee came up with a Rooney Rule, which basically says that head coaches, and it's been expanded in 2009, that head coaches and front office folks and general managers, you have to interview a minority candidate. And most people would agree that there has been positive steps with the Rooney Rule. But here we are now, 2019, and going into this year's season, we will only have one black head coach. The Miami Dolphins grabbed the defensive coordinator from the Patriots, smart move. Highly qualified. And then the person who grabbed him, his name is Chris Greer, and he's the only person of color as a general manager in the league. So we had this past year 8 open head coaching jobs, and 7 went to white coaches. So this upcoming year, we'll have Flores in Miami. We'll have Ron Rivera, our Panthers coach. We'll have Anthony Lynn of the Los Angeles Chargers. It's so funny not saying San Diego Chargers.
I know, right? LA
give Chargers.
It 5 years. It'll be San Diego
again. And then the old man of the group, Mike Tomlin of the Sixers.
Steelers,
of the Philadelphia.
You still got Philadelphia on the brain.
Actually, I've been following the Sixers lately, of the Pittsburgh Steelers. So that's where we are. Still very troubling.
Yeah, speaking with Dr. Debbie Strowman. So what moves us in the right direction? We've got the rule that says you have to interview at least one minority candidate, but that oftentimes will lead to one kind of token interview, and then you end up hiring the person that you were going to hire in the first place. What gets us past that?
Well, I think when you consider all movements of change, it comes from the community, the grassroots, the activists.
Yep.
And so this year... well, I'll say over the past 2 years with the Black Lives Matters movement and then it moving into sports, you saw activists who are actually current players. And so the community, which is made up of all people, all races, all ages, that community plus current players all becoming organized activists, that's the only way we'll move the needle.
Yeah.
Because far too often you get people in these positions, again, regardless of your race, your ethnicity, they get into these positions, they get into the institution and the system, and they become quiet. Or they don't necessarily have the tools to be able to persuade, to create legislation, to actually move the needle. So I think it's definitely the combination of having activists in and outside the system that's going to make a change.
Yeah, and consistent activism, right? Because it also requires time. You have that initial movement when you have Black Lives Matter, in this case, Colin Kaepernick in the NFL. The first thing you get is the backlash, right? And you get regression before you get progress, and then the progress happens.
And you're exactly right. It is going to take time, but, you know, as Dr. Martin Luther King stated in Letter from Birmingham Jail and other activists have stated, how long do we have to wait? You know, it's almost like the house, well, it's not almost, the house is on fire. Even though there are millions of dollars being flown all around because people look and say, well, look at all the money that's being made. Look at all the people, the attendance, viewership, all of that. But the house is on fire. So how long do you have to wait before we put the fire out?
And a lot of times it takes way too long. It happens where I'm thinking about this in the context of an email that we got from Duke University earlier today. The university is doing a special event I think next week, because it would have been February 13th, next week to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the student takeover of the Allen Building, which was 50 years ago. That led to a backlash in 1969. Now it's part of the history that the university celebrates. But it's 50 years later, and they're only just now getting around to it. And that's something that needs to speed up a lot.
Well, I think when we look back, if we're around 30, 40, 50 years from now, people will look back at this time period and what's happened with UNC.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely in terms of the activists and Maya Little and her work. But it does take time. But I also want to point out activist DeRay McKesson. He said that white Americans have the extraordinary privilege of looking at each incident outside the context of racial inequality, racial injustice, or the legacy of racism in America. So he basically says that white Americans tend not to see racial injustice as clearly as black Americans do. It has to be foaming at the mouth, overt racism for white Americans to even acknowledge it.
Yep.
And I think, sadly, that is definitely the case. And I've said repeatedly, it's often not where you stand, but where you sit in mm-hmm. matters in this. And when you feel that heat from the fire, when you have the foot on your neck, when you've been denied, when you have been discriminated against, when you're watching your friends, your neighbors, family members, all being hurt by the tentacles of racism, this becomes very center. And you can't look away. You can't stop talking about race when our institutions and our society make everything about race.
Speaking with Dr. Debbie Stroman, and we're talking about this in the context of the NFL, but let's blow it up and talk about the sports world in general. What should athletes, owners, administrators, fans be doing to move the dial, not just in the NFL, but in the sports world in general and in the world beyond?
Well, first and foremost, any type of organizing, you have to listen to, you have to pay attention to, you have to be in dialogue with people on the ground. And so those are your community folks. And so whether that's the athlete who's throwing and tackling, whether it's the people who are affected by the stadium that comes and lands on their community, and all of a sudden now they've been displaced, and you've got a community and you've got a stadium and a parking lot where you used to live. So talking to the community and being engaged, because oftentimes that's where the solutions are. And then also I would say we have to have a history lesson. We have to go back to education. We have to understand how we got to where we are today. And it isn't the narrative that something's wrong with people of color. It's not the narrative that there were just a small group of one percenters who just did all these things. This was the entire community, as in everybody in the United States who participated in, let's just say a policy came down that was very discriminatory. There were people who weren't the one percenters who let it happen, who were complicit. So I think an education piece is necessary as well.
And that's Stroman on Sports for this week. Dr. Debbie Stroman, thank you so much.
Thank you.